Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Monster X Radio. It's January 12th, 2013. I'm your host, Johnny Bigfoot, and with me, as usual, is my co-host, Bigfoot researcher, Shane Corson. How are you tonight, Shane?
I'm alive. The audience will have to excuse me a little bit tonight. I got a mild case of pneumonia and been battling that all week. But other than that, you know, I'm glad to be here and excited about our guest and whatnot. So, got a little chance to get out to an area called Malala here in Oregon over the weekend, even with the little bout of pneumonia that I'm battling, and check out an encounter report out there. And, man, I tell you what, so blessed to live up here in Oregon. Just so many great spots. You know, every time I go out to these different areas, I just get blown away the vastness of what's out there. And getting to meet witnesses is just a major plus, and hear their story and get to see what's going on and learn a little bit about what, you know, they've encountered and go from there. But anyways, glad to be here, Johnny.
Yeah. Looks like we have an audio problem in the chat room. Yeah, if you guys can just tell them to refresh, we should be all right.
Yeah,
Bigfoot
refresh.
Where was that in Oregon again?
That was Malala, Oregon, next to the Malala River. It's an area I don't venture too much just because it's fairly close to me, really, but it's an area that's just not in my research area, you know, but it's one of the hot spots in Oregon and the U.S., to be honest. It's got a lot of great encounter reports out of there. I know Cliff Rockman's been out there a ton of times doing research and encounter reports and sightings and whatnot. So Malala, it's awesome. You know, it's like Clackamas.
Is that
where
the mountains?
There's mountains there. Yeah, it's not in the mountains per se, but it is. It's about, from where I'm at now, it's about an hour drive. So it's really not too bad.
Nice.
Yeah. Malala.
It don't matter how sick you are. You're never too sick to squat, huh?
Oh, no, I couldn't do a whole lot of hiking and whatnot, and thank goodness, you know, the river borders, the road, so it's not as if, I had to go out in the mountains and hiking and whatnot. It was fairly close to the road sighting, and, but, I mean, on either side, you just got forests for miles and miles and miles. Like I said, you know, it is just got so much activity out there, and this time of year, in the winter months, that's the areas you want to go to because it's lower elevation. There's no snow out there. They do get snow, but it's lower elevation, so it's a great area.
And it's not that cold, is it, right now?
No, we're talking yesterday when I was out, it was mid-40s, about 45, so it was plenty warm, you know, not too cold. We had a huge storm pass through here, so the river was raging, but other than that, you know, in the higher elevations, they got about a foot of snow. Lower elevations, just a ton of rain. You know, 45 degrees is pretty warm for this time of year, and so it's very, very, very comfortable.
Yeah, it's been mild here just now after that cold spell we had. Well, all right, let's get on to our guest.
Yeah,
tonight we welcome Dave Moser of the Carolina Bigfoot Field Research Group. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hey, hello, guys.
Johnny,
hey, Dave.
How you guys doing?
Hey, not too bad.
Great,
man. Not too bad. Yeah.
Can you hear me all right?
I was, yeah.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Funny, because I was actually sent a message by one of your fans, Dave, to look into you and to try to get you on the show. You know, before that, I had never heard of you.
That must be the one and only Jennifer from down there in the low country, I was thinking.
Yeah.
You know,
I've
been searching for somebody down in that area, although, of course, Apex, he's from that area, too, and I've been actually talking to him and some of his research he's been doing. I know he's been a guest on your show before, so he's a great guy, too. But, yeah, she's interested. She's kind of a newbie, so to speak, but, you know, that's sometimes can be a good thing. So I look forward to possibly using her to look into a few sightings down that way. That, you know, receiving quite a few on the website from that area of the country, actually South Carolina. So hopefully she might be able to help us out a little bit.
Excellent. Well, you got a few more fans now. So let me tell you, I got a chance to talk to you on Friday for a couple hours. And, man, you got my respect and love what you got going on. And I kind of like your whole approach and your ideas. You know, you're very skeptical. And, you know, you don't jump on anything. And even on with your own research and whatnot, you're very you come at it with a very, you know, scientific and thought process. And I respect that. And that's what I look for when I follow people, you know.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. And, I mean, you know, like I told you the other day when I was talking to you, I'm still real kind of skeptical about the whole Bigfoot thing. I mean, I know that there's something out there and it probably is a Bigfoot. But until I see one in broad daylight, you know, cross in front of me, I'm still got to remain somewhat skeptical. And I mean, you know, you got to. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Until you do see one. I mean, I research with a lot of guys who've seen them. You know, it's just to them, it's no big deal. You know, they're there, and you can't tell them no different. And I respect them for you know, their beliefs too. And like I said, I'm still a little on the outside. I'd like to have a Class A during the day. I've had them at night. But, you know, and got them on thermal, and I think I might have one on video from the day before, 24th there or 25th down there with Rick Corliss in Georgia. I think I got one, possibly had one on Sony Night Vision, but remains to be seen. But I knew they were close. But you know how that goes. You know, until you actually see one.
You should get out there with Apex if you can.
Believe me, I'm dying to go out with him. He sent me some research work that he's been doing, and that guy is a brain. Don't let his redneck persona fool you, man. I'm telling you, because he sent me some stuff. I'm looking through this stuff, and you know, the first thing I look at is like he's going with deer density populations put out by the DNR South Carolina, and he's matching up all these witness reports to these different channels of where these deer are concentrated at, and it's amazing some of the stuff he's come up with.
Yeah,
I love
like
the swamps
that.
Anyway. I mean, so I have no problem going down there one night and hanging out with him in the swamp. You know, I mean, might get freaked out. You might not. You never know. But
yeah, probably will. But,
yeah, I mean, you seem to skate under the radar somewhat. You know, I mean, a lot of people haven't heard of you, but, you know, you seem to be in the field a lot, you know, if not
well,
you
I
know,
mean,
as much or
my
more
God
than anyone.
Takes me out there every day.
You know,
I mean,
well, I guess why don't
I'm
you start off by telling
day,
us a little bit about how you got started in the Bigfoot field?
Well, I mean, I guess a lot of it has to go back to my something my dad did for me when I was, you know, pretty young, still living in Pennsylvania at the time. He took me to see, of course, the Mysterious Monsters, you know, the 1976 documentary to the movie theater to see it one night, just me and him. And unfortunately, my dad passed away 15, 16 years ago, and he's no longer with us. But, you know, ever since him taking me to that, I've always kind of been skeptical. But, you know, I'm like everybody else. I thought that was something that happened up in, you know, the northwest of the country, Oregon, Washington, California, you know, that area. And I never dreamed that they would actually be in this area or close to some of the areas I've been to. And what actually got me into it was I had what I call kind of a stalking, following encounter back in, I believe it was 19, it was probably about 95, 96, 96 maybe, somewhere in there. Yeah, I still don't remember the exact year because I used to fly fish so much. I'm a big-time fly fisherman and always looking for out-of-the-way places. But I was hiking out of a place that had something parallel me on a ridge. And, you know, I got out of the woods and got in my car, and, I mean, it scared me so much. I was packing a 380 at the time, and I actually put one in the chamber. And I was that frightened. I thought it was a person. I didn't think anything animal. You know, at first I thought maybe it was a deer, but nah, I mean, it was kind of strange. As soon as I started picking up a fast pace because I had about a quarter mile left to get out of there, and I was by myself. And when I picked up pace, it picked up pace. When I stopped, it stopped. And, I got to the car, turned around, shined my headlights in there, and, I was glad to be safe. And, I didn't really think much more about it. And a few years after that, I was watching a documentary, and I don't even remember the name of it, but it was something on Discovery or History, and they were talking about a big thing was is they were talking about a stalking incident or somebody that was followed by a Bigfoot, real similar to what happened to me. So it kind of caused me to start doing some research because that was the Internet was pretty much a buzz back then, and I came across BFRO's website, going through the encounters and stuff, and the encounters listed by state, and sure enough, right across the river. And to tell you where I was, I mean, I was in Georgia, but I was across the South Carolina border, near Lake Hartwell. I mean, anybody can look it up, and I don't mind even talking about this location, but I basically had. Looking on there, I see where a guy had the same exact thing happen to him across the river. So, I mean, I toyed around with the idea of submitting a report, and I didn't do it right away. And, time went by. I was doing more research, and, I just couldn't believe it because I've been in the woods since I was 15, 16. I played in the woods even younger than that, and I've never had anything like that happen. I mean, now that I look back on it, I know there might have been some things that could be Biggie-related. I just started doing that research, and I finally said I need to go ahead and submit a report because reports are good because it might help somebody else out. And so I sent a report in about, it takes them a while to get back to you. I mean, they're all volunteers over there. I mean, I know quite a few BFRO members, and Don Tart lives in that area. He finally got back to me. He's a great guy and kind of a mentor when it comes to this whole Bigfoot thing. And he wanted me to meet him down there. And so, I go down there and meet him. And, Don, I mean, it turns out he's kind of a nuclear engineer, and I'm kind of like scratching my head. This guy, works for a nuclear power plant, and what's he doing searching for Bigfoot? Trying to put that whole picture together. I mean, I said, this guy, man, he's tripping me out. I mean, I've seen them. They're here. It's kind of like the whole, darn, boy, you've seen these things?
Yeah.
I ended up meeting him down there and, kind of gave him a walkthrough and kind of what happened to me, and he showed me one of the areas down there where he's researched and got some tracks before, and it was right before the South Carolina, a couple months before the South Carolina BFRO expedition, and he invited me to go to the expedition, and, I went to the expedition, and I actually think I saw one on night vision that night, kind of had an encounter there on the last night there, But my main purpose of going was to try to network and find some other guys interested. And it's actually worked out. I've met quite a few guys who I'm still in touch with, and we still get together on occasion. And, I try to share what I find with those guys. And, I mean, they're from all walks of life. Everything from school teacher down to a CEO. And, I mean, just guys with the same things in common. I mean, Bigfoot to me is just a good excuse to go camping. If I wasn't doing Bigfoot thing, I'd still be fly fishing and backpacking into these remote areas.
Speaking of, Dave, I want to give our viewers a little bit of your background on that as well, because you're not just some guy that just started, you know, just started going out to the field and backpacking and whatnot. I mean, it's been part of your living as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Sure has.
Yeah, fly fishing and some of your other and your actual occupation. I know you've only been doing it for so long, but still you go into a lot of these remote areas, mm-hmm. prime areas, you know, Bigfoot habitat.
Yeah, and actually through the job, I actually talked to Paul Hayes earlier today with the Ohio encounter I had up there at one of my coworkers. We had I'm pretty sure it was a biggie come down the other side of a creek and screaming at us when, you know, less than probably 40, 50 yards, something like that. And, and I actually caught a glimpse of something big, hairy, and shaggy at about 5 feet, but it was so thick in there you couldn't see it. You know, the first thing my coworker says, let's get in the truck, man. I'm like, no, don't get in the truck. My coworkers at first, I really haven't shared with them the Bigfoot things that I do, and the reason being is not because I'm, scared of what they're going to make fun of me. I could care less about that, but I was wanting to get first-person accounts without any influence on it. You tell them you're a Bigfoot researcher right away. I mean, I wanted to get it because these guys spend time in the woods a lot more than I have. I mean, I've been in the woods, quite a bit myself. But, these guys have been doing it. My coworker, he's been doing this 15, 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually gotten some encounters out of them. Actually, one guy, he had a hunting encounter right before he was about to hunt. Go in the woods one morning, they had something come up and scream at them, and they got in the truck and never went out and hunted that day. So, you never know.
It seems like we all start with the BFRO. That's like that's first base.
I had no hard feelings toward BFRO members or anything like that.
They got a great database.
Some of my buddies are actually BFRO guys, and I think I was telling you, Shane, when I was talking to you mm-hmm. about the Finding Bigfoot TV series on Discovery Channel. I mean, I personally don't watch it all the time, although I do kind of look at the critiques on the show. People badmouth it, but I think it's a good thing. I'm going to tell you why I think it's a good thing, and that's for the kids out there. I can't tell you the number of families I've come across backpacking out of the woods into these camping areas, especially in Uwari, that have brought their kids out there because their kids wanted to go experience Bigfoot. Whether Bigfoot's there or not, I mean, that's important to me, to get these kids off the couch and out in the woods.
I never thought of that.
Absolutely, man. I mean, the show gets such a bad rap, but people don't realize that it's just that. It's a TV show that the producers are the ones that actually hold all the cards. It's a TV show. Do you get some interesting tidbits and encounter stories? Yeah, heck yeah. I enjoy watching just for that. But it's a TV show. At the same time, you're right.
I know Matt, Cliff, Bobo, and Renee, their hands are tied, basically, because they're doing a TV show. I mean, everybody probably knows that,
Matt even came out and stated that, this show isn't geared for the serious researcher. It's just geared for the common folk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I've personally been involved with the show before, and I've seen it firsthand exactly what goes on. And the people there are Matt, Renee, Bobo, and Cliff are dedicated to going about their business and researching, but it is a TV show and they have to abide by the rules, but at the same time, and I told you this, Dave, that, when's the last time you've seen a show where one of those, like Bobo or Cliff have taken Finding Bigfoot to one of their areas, their specific research areas? Never. Why? Because they don't want it exposed or, people heading out there and whatnot. And they don't want their area to be, overridden by a bunch of people, and they don't want to be exposed by a TV show,
Yeah. I have been, the producers contacted me, back last year early in the summer, expressed interest on some of the stuff that we have. Some of it at the time, some of it, actually some of it still is private, and we'll get into that later. But, I'm in the process of, basically politely declining, and just because the areas, I'm really scared of contamination in any of my areas. And to open an area up, I wouldn't mind sharing possibly my encounter, the one encounter especially that I had, as far as ever going on, doing the show or giving locations away, there's no way.
yeah. Same here. Not in a million years. But it gets people, it creates interest, it gets people out into the field just to enjoy camping. I mean, the chances of somebody encountering Bigfoot are very, very slim, obviously. But it gets them out there and, gets them to enjoy nature and more respect for it. And, it's better than sitting, playing your video games all day or online all day. Get out there and enjoy nature and opportunity that it provides.
Yeah,
so.
Exercise.
Yeah. Now, Dave, how long have you actually been researching then? And how long have you had like the North Carolina Bigfoot thing going on?
I started the Bigfoot thing, kind of after my BFRO expedition I went on, and as far as the research part, I started that in probably about, I'd say 2008, somewhere in there, but I really wasn't going out searching for them. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't going out there and doing the expeditions like I am now, every other week or whatever, or twice a month. So I haven't been doing it a long time, and that's why I appreciate the researchers I have met who share so much with me. It gave me a wealth of information, I'll tell you what.
Hey, you've been doing work with that Rick Corliss guy, huh? He was on MNRBRT recently.
Rick is the man. He's retired, and he can go out to these areas. He has acquired so much land that's on private property, it's not even funny. And we have one piece of property right now that has confirmed 5 Class A's. And that's basically where I got the photo of, the supposed troll figure or whatever it is, it's been circulating around. I tried to release it. It is what it is. I mean, I can't say it's a biggie. I don't know. But the detail's pretty incredible in the face of it. I mean, it does appear to have a brow ridge, not possibly a small one. I don't know. Rick had a Class A 30 minutes prior to that with using night vision. It was Generation 1. That he saw it on. He thought it was one of our other investigators till it put its head down and kept walking. The distance probably about 20, 30 feet. And I came down the hill.
Does he live in a very squatchy area?
Oh, yeah. He lives in Elbert County, Georgia. And these areas are within 20, 30 minutes of his house. A lot of them are. I mean, we got some across. I mean, we got them all over down there now. I mean, I have private property in South Carolina, in Anderson County, Hart County, Elbert County. I haven't done too much in McCormick County, which is right south of, down there of Anderson County. But, my family lives in Anderson, South Carolina, my mother and my brother and sister. And so that's one of the reasons I'd like to go down there, too. I get to see them. I mean, they'd probably like to see me more sometimes, but I'm usually out and about in the woods, and they understand. They're pretty supportive of me doing that. So
I love that area. It's pretty good habitat down there. I lived in Georgia for a couple of years. I've been to South Carolina, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been to the Smoky Mountains?
I sure have. I used to fly fish Hazel Creek, Eagle Creek, Forney Creek, all the ones right across Fontana Lake. Had a pretty good bear encounter up there on Eagle Creek by myself one time. Pretty spooky, but good fishing up there, but I never had any encounters as far as I know. you know, as far as, I did walk into that wall one time, you know, that people talk about. I even heard Derek Randall's talk about it on your show when he was on there last time.
Yeah.
That wall of fear. I was fishing this area north of there called Bone Valley on Hazel Creek, and I ran into that wall one time, and I'll tell you what, I got the heck out of there. And I mean, I wasn't even thinking Bigfoot at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was just thinking something. I was thinking bear possibly, but, you know, I mean, probably was one close by. I wouldn't doubt it.
Now
that I
know, it's a weird thing.
You know?
That area is pristine. That's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. I love it.
And I hope they don't ever build that road to nowhere across there. Because, I mean, I've kayaked across the lake and backpacked in. I mean, if you backpack in or out, it's like a 20-mile hike. And, I mean, I'm not a long-distance backpacker. I usually try to set up a base camp within three to 5 miles of where I, you know, point A, where I park. But,
yeah.
I've actually kayaked across and went up there and backpacked in the fish. And I used to take the ferry service out of Fontana Marina across, too. Those guys do a great job. They'll take you over there, drop you off, and then come back and pick you up. I mean.
Well, Dave, I wanted to touch upon that wall you were just talking about. You know, mm-hmm. I've experienced it myself, and I don't know how to explain it. It's just a, you know, a lot. Some people may refer to it as infrasound or something like that. I'm not going to go there. I don't know, but it's just a certain. It's, you know, I've encountered it before when I've come across bear or cougar, but not like I've seen them. I've just seen evidence mm-hmm. of them after the fact. But it's just a certain wall. You get to an area where you don't feel comfortable crossing or that you should move on any further. It's just like you feel the need to stop and turn around. It's, you know, and usually when I have that, there's usually a lack of wildlife. It gets real quiet, and it's kind of eerie, but at the same time, it's just this, like, almost like a sixth sense that you're like, oh, okay, I don't feel comfortable. Something's not right here, you know? And I have actually one time got up and left because of that. Just something wasn't right. I don't know what it was. I was out by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know what it was. I just didn't – it didn't feel right, you know. So I did, in fact, leave. I felt this before, and I've stayed, you know, I haven't left and had, you know, maybe encounters or possible things happen, but nothing that, you know, harm me or anything like that. But I find that reference by Derek fascinating, because if you've spent enough time in the woods as a hunter or hiker or whatnot, you will, or like he mentioned too, as a logger, because they spend tons of time in the forest, you just get this sixth sense or something that tells you, you know, you need to pay attention and move away or you know, something along that effect. And to hear you say that you felt it as well is you know, I find that fascinating.
I've actually felt it, you know, a number of times. It is a different feeling from seeing a bear. I mean, I had a bear
yeah.
come up on my tent one night, and I mean, yeah, I was scared shitless, to tell you
mm-hmm.
the truth.
Yeah.
I think I told you about that. I had one circle my tent, and they go over to where you pull up your food. They have pull-offs in the Smoky Mountains, these pull-ups where you actually put your food on a pulley system and pull it up. And I heard the bear go from my tent over there, and he was snorting and gruffing going around my tent 3 miles up in there by myself. I'm like, oh, shit, what am I doing up here?
Yeah.
You know, and by myself, and I slowly unzipped the zipper on the one side of the tent while he was over there and took a shot straight in the air, and that I heard that bear knocking down trees, breaking trees, going through the woods, and I was like, yeah, don't have to worry about him anymore tonight. And sure enough, I didn't have any more bear problems. But
yeah,
I was pretty freaked out.
Yeah, no, I've had a bear push his nose right up against my tent, and that'll freak you out. it'll scare you, you know. But I did a
loud
slap.
I don't know if I was brave enough. I don't know if I would have been brave enough to slap his nose like you did.
Yeah, no, I did. I slapped his nose and I clapped my hands real loud and screamed, and it took off. It didn't. It didn't come back, you know, that I could tell of. You know, if it did, I didn't hear it. But, no, it scared. It ran off, and that was that, you know. But, yeah, it got me for a minute. But, yeah.
It's a different type of fear, though. I mean, than even that. I mean, it's more of a warning fear. I mean, that you know, even I like the way Derek explained it. Even in the documentary that's fixing to come out, as far as the preview of that, actually listening to him on that kind of gave me the creeped out feeling, just because I know exactly what he's talking about. You know, I mean, that's a
but, you know,
pretty,
at the same time, there's times when I've been in the woods and I felt like I was being watched. When I look back now, and I know there was no Bigfoots. I mean, maybe it's because I was a little younger, but there was certain times that stood out over other times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Was, you know, I could have been being watched by a person, an animal, or maybe nothing. You know, I think it's there's
right.
a lot that makes up the, you know, the biochemical reactions we have when we're alone
oh,
in the woods, you know.
Yep. No, absolutely.
I feel like since I've been spending more time in the woods, I've kind of got picked up on that, and I've had more of a sixth sense. Now, I mean, I haven't really had any encounters in the woods other than the one up in a cat right outside of, what was it, in Ohio, near the West Virginia border. I haven't really had any more encounters, I mean, while working, so to speak, but I have found a lot of signs. I found some possible structures and definitely found some footprints close to my house, actually, you know, where I live, that's not too far off. But I kind of hate that, you know, a lot of these areas are being eventually clear cut. I mean, I'm not a tree hugger, but, you know, sometimes it makes me think. I mean, I'm like, oh, man, we're just, yeah, I mean, we're contributing before the fact, so to speak. We're usually in their topo in these properties in the middle of nowhere, you know, for elevation heights and stuff. And but, you know, it's really picking up, and there's more areas being right now being basically developed in the housing areas, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just saw a show up here. They're, you know, developing more on wetlands and prairies. And some people will say, hey, we have more forests now than we did, I don't know, 100, 200 years ago. But the forests we have are real, you know, they're new growth for us. And we are still developing and still expanding. And I noticed on your site, you know, you're for the protection of the species. And I used to be in the position of they're doing just fine without us. They don't need our protection. But I think I've changed my mind on that now. You know, after a lot of speculation, and I've come to the conclusion that if they do exist, they might be going extinct, you know. We got a lot of forests, but they're surrounded by a constant development.
That's it. I mean, they're constantly being pushed around. I mean, you know, and I see it all over. You know, of course, Apex down there in the low country, I mean, there's a lot of swamp area down that way in their drainage systems, which are basically considered wetlands, so they'll never be able to build there. You know, maybe down the road, the government will come in and say, you know, they'll allow it, but I'm kind of glad that those areas are semi-protected at this point. So, you know, hopefully they will have a place to go. And your national park system, too. It's definitely.
Well, yeah, I imagine they had a more of a range during the Native American times, and that's why I think they're somewhat stuck in these isolated pockets. And, you know, I think which is going to lead to inbreeding and, you know, eventually extinction if something doesn't change, because obviously they're rare. You know, it's very rare.
Yeah. And there was a recent report that came out that was talking, I don't remember who put it out there, but I was reading it the other day, talking about a lot of the large carnivores in the world beginning to become extinct, and that's bears, lions, tigers, you know, all those sort of things starting to become, not extinct, but their habitats being taken away, and they're getting harder and harder to find. I mean, and, you know, it only stands to reason as the human population increases and we're clear-cutting and taking away these areas. Yeah, there's a lot of protected areas and natural, you know, parks and whatnot, national parks. But still, it's even though they're so big and huge, it still is cutting down on the territory. I mean, bears are now encroaching upon us and whatnot, and, you know, getting in, you know, they're becoming dumpster divers and getting less afraid of humans, and then they're getting shot and killed because, you know, once they cross that threshold, it's over for them, basically. You know, you go to places like Yosemite, and they're not even afraid of humans up there. You know, I've had them, I've spent many nights at Yosemite, and they come in there pretty frequently, and they have the bear trap set up and whatnot. But as we take away their natural resources, they have only a few options, and that's one approach upon us, you know, or go extinct because they have nowhere to go. So, I mean, for Bigfoot, yeah, I would say, that, you know, it's definitely making an impact upon their environment, obviously, you know, and I don't know if that's going to lead to more sightings or less sightings, you know, probably less sightings as, you know, less sightings as they go out further and further away, but we'll, you know, we'll see what happens, but, you know, I don't know the terrain in, you know, I've never been to either of the Carolinas, and I know you do research in Georgia as well, but Dave, can you give a brief description of, like, what's available out there? I know I've talked to Apex before, and he's kind of explained it, but North Carolina, you know, what kind of, what's the terrain like there, and what would, how would a Bigfoot survive out there? What's the resources?
Well, basically the terrain in South Carolina and North Carolina, to me, is like the most ideal terrain because you have everything. You have the beaches to the east, and you have the mountains to the west. Even South Carolina does. It used to be one of my home fishing grounds. It was on the Chattooga River on the South Carolina-Georgia border, on up into North Carolina. That's where they filmed Deliverance, which I mean, never did hear a banjo play out there, but been into some of the areas where they have some of the old movie sets and stuff, you know, up on some of the cliffs and some of the gorge sections. But it's actually an interesting area, and there's quite a few areas up there. I know that Mac Pruitt and Enigma Research do a lot of work in that corner of Georgia. And, of course, that's where the infamous Rick Dyer is from, that area as well. kind of gives us all a bad name. I'm not going to talk any more about that, but anyway, you know, and then you got the foothills leading down to the swamps, which is the you know, they call it sand hills, and then you got the foothills, sand hills, and going all the way down into the coast there. And Apex, he's down in that area in the swamp zone, and that's some. Those swamps are so big and thick. I mean, there's no telling what's in there. I mean, he's had all those encounters and with the cryptoid, you know, type animals he's seen. I would guess, yeah, that there probably are things like that in there myself. I mean, you know, those are thick swamps. And there's still a lot of areas that are undeveloped, too. I mean, I'm a pilot, and I used to fly up over those areas looking for fishing spots. And I've seen, I mean, there's so much land around, it's not even funny that it's undeveloped. You know, but I just hope that 50 years from now that, it's not even more and more knocked down, it's a great place. I mean, there's all kind of places for them to hide.
Yeah, the economy slowed the development down, too. When I was down in Savannah, Georgia, even right outside of Savannah, it was very squatchy. And what I noticed is it didn't seem like kids play in the woods as much there. I mean, and, like, down by the river, they'd have it blocked off and things, and there wasn't as much trails like up here. You know, down there, though, they have poisonous spiders, snakes, gators. You know, there's a lot more to look out for when you go in those woods.
Yeah, I'm somewhat of an amateur herpetologist. I mean, I've collected snakes when I was younger, and I had no fear of snakes. And, yeah, that's something down in that area you have to deal with more poisonous snakes, especially in the swamp areas. You know, you got the diamondbacks, coral snakes, and, you know, of course, copperheads and cottonmouths. Up here, we don't have, in the northern section, once you get this far up, you don't have to really deal too much with water moccasins and the diamondback rattlers, which are, you know, pretty fearsome snake. You see the occasional, possibly in the mountains, you see timber rattlesnakes and copperheads, of course, but, you know, I've noticed in the woods, though, I mean, I'm still seeing the snakes, and, you know, to me, amphibians are, you know, frogs and salamanders are definitely a sign of a healthy ecosystem, and, you know, I see them quite often, all of those. So, I mean, you know, the amphibians are usually the first to go when there's pollution problems, so, you know,
exactly.
I've not seen any problems with them, but know, there's no telling down in the swamp, so what could be down there? I mean, Apex was even talking about some of the possible, you know, pythons and stuff like that. You know, if somebody lets one go, it's ideal habitat, especially if they can crawl up in a hole and overwinter in that hole, you know, without freezing. Of course, this year will be it's going to be a rough year on them due to the temperatures, but definitely still have pretty healthy ecosystems around, that's for sure.
Well, speaking of that, Dave, so, I mean, what as, you know, obviously there's plenty of water. Water's not an issue, and we talked about this before about, you know, water as a necessity, especially for if you're going to do research, you have to go around bodies of water, but what type of, you know, is there a huge amount of food resource for them? I mean, what kind of, you guys have a lot of deer, and you guys have boar there as well, right?
Right. You know, deer are a big problem. Whether the DNR ends up extending, you know, South Carolina has one of the longest deer hunting seasons in the country, I believe. And in the wild boar, especially in the area on the South Carolina-Georgia border, is, I mean, I know a couple hunters who have, you know, access to Corps of Engineer land that they're going into and trying to take care of the population. And I catch them. I used to catch them on game cam, you know, trail cameras all the time, game camera, whatever, quite a bit. And you know, that's probably about the only animal you really need to fear in the woods. I mean, when, you know, as far as I'm concerned, is the wild boars are just insane in that area down there. Now, this area up here, I've been doing a lot of work surveying off the Catawba River, which is south of Charlotte. And I've talked to several hunters, landowners, you know, been there all their lives. Guy the other week in his 70s I was talking to, and they don't have any problems with boars in that area, not right now, but, you know, you never know here down the road. But, yeah, the wild hog is definitely a problem down there just because of the amount of damage they do. In the deer, I mean, you constantly see them hit on the roads everywhere. I can't even tell you how many deer I've seen this year being in the woods surveying. I mean, it's just over 100. I mean, you know, I mean, I've had them walk up to me. I've had them and some huge deer. And especially when I was doing a lot of pipeline work.
I saw that picture of you surveying with that little yellow boat with the GoPro mounted on the front. That looks sweet.
Yeah, it's, I was going to tell you, that's something I'm actually working on. You know, the FAA is getting ready to, you know, basically ready to certify the aerial drone thing for surveying. Right now we use, you know, pilots to do that. And I'm actually looking at getting into the aerial surveying with drones. I mean, because I do hold a FAA private pilot's license, which that will be a requirement for anybody flying drones to have commercially. I mean, of course, you can go down and buy. Anybody can go buy one and attach a GoPro to it, you know, or a thermal, fly it around. But to do it with a company, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. I'm hoping I'll be able to get into that with the company I work for, which you had. The company I'm working for, they're in the cutting-edge equipment. I mean, we have some really high-dollar cutting-edge equipment, including the boat, which we use to survey depths and get depths of lakes, ponds, so forth.
That's fascinating. So, I mean, have you? What are your thoughts on, like, the Falcon project then, since this is something you're kind of familiar with as far as the drone thing? Do you think it's a positive thing?
I think it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, hey. I mean, you got to use technology to your advantage. I mean, you know, if you could get something up there, and I also like the Apex was talking about possibly putting a you know, a balloon or a blimp up there, where you're not making a lot of noise. You know, to possibly hold a thermal camera or, you know, GoPro IR lens on it. That's would be the way to go, because you could definitely get a good view 360 degrees around you and or wherever you're deploying this thing at. And the Falcon projects, that's just an awesome idea. I was like, I want to do that. I want to do that, you know?
Huh. Well, that's fascinating. I know, you know, William Barnes, we've had him on our show before, and he's, you know, still trying to get this thing up and going and get funded for it, but I know he's still looking for pilots.
Well, I mean, don't tell anybody, but when I was younger and I used to fly, I have crashed a few.
Well, I think that comes with the territory.
I'll tell you what, man, I spend 3 months building one, and you take off and you see the thing, the wind blow it straight up in the air and it comes back down, you know, and you got a big mess to clean up down there, and at least the servos still work, right?
I would love to take one of those little boats squashing.
Yeah, see, that's my idea right there. I might have to talk to the CEO of our company. I've actually spent some time with him in Pennsylvania when I was up there surveying.
I'd be in a bigger boat behind it and send that thing down like a river or something, you know, if you could remote control it. And I don't know the technology you can do with those, but that would be pretty neat.
That boat, I mean, it's easy to navigate it and drive it and stuff. But that thing is cool. I'd really like to use it. I mean, because I got some waterfront property down there on private land where I could deploy that thing across a lake or, you know, in a stream, and you could get right up close to the bank, you know.
So,
actually really quiet.
We were talking earlier about trail cameras. What are your thoughts on trail cameras? A lot of people are for trail cameras. A lot of people are against them. You think it's a negative thing, a positive thing, or something that's just useless in the field of as far as Bigfoot research?
I think they're a good thing. The problem is, you know, when you put one up, it's like somebody coming in and hanging a new picture on your wall in your house. I mean, they see them.
Yeah.
The main thing we've been trying to do, and one of my partners actually has a pretty good picture that they got up in Uari years ago. And, I mean, the guys I'm with in Uari, by the way, I mean, those guys have been in there since 96. They've been in there before any of these other guys have been in there, including Mike Green and all those, some of the newer guys. And they have some really good areas in there, but they've been successful by actually taking these two or three of them and triangulating them, you know, and leaving some remain hidden. Got quite a few, actually, I've seen three or four pictures that are actually, I consider, pretty darn good for a trail camera to, you know, take one of in some heavy brush. But the thing is with some of these newer trail cameras, I've been taking my money and sinking it more into the, thermal and, right now I'm kind of working on some wireless video stuff where I can leave a thermal somewhere and just let it run, you know, and be able to watch it, you know, 1,000 feet away or whatever. I'd like to be able to set one up full time to where you could just keep it powered, you know, in a certain area. But
right.
That would be cool.
Yeah, just on that. The newer trail cameras, I'd be interested in trying some of the new stuff out with the black IR.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you know, basically you can't see it. I mean,
right.
Compared to the other ones, I mean, I think they can actually see that IR when that light comes on. I mean, which it's pretty obvious they probably can.
Yeah, I mean,
or they
feel
see
the same
you set
way.
Them up.
Well, that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but,
these thermals seem to be the new big thing. You know, this thermal thing. I mean, I think they're a good tool in helping find things and part of the puzzle. But they just lack so much detail. And,
they do.
I'd much rather have a good picture. Do you think Bigfoots are nocturnal? Is that why people are so into the therm? They're so into going out at night.
I don't think they're not necessarily nocturnal, but I do think that they have what people call sentinels around during the day, watching the group while they sleep. And if you get into that area, you're going to know it real quick. We've had knocks in the middle of the day before, especially down in that Georgia area, especially when you go into certain areas. We thought we pulled a picture of one across the beaver pond. You know, it's one of those blob squatch pictures, but we had a power knock at 3 o'clock in the afternoon right when we went into this beaver pond. So I started snapping pictures across, 60 yards across, and there was a ridge on the other side, and sure enough, man, you blow that up and you can see pretty much one sitting in there. And, of course, you can take any picture and do a some of my buddies did thermal negatives on them where you can actually see heat signatures in some of the areas. You know, where something was sitting there that was hotter than its surroundings. But
maybe they're just more active at night and they feel safer.
I think they are because they have that advantage, especially when hunting.
Yeah.
I mean,
they know we're in bed.
Well. I mean, yeah. you know, from when we were talking the other day, how they can sneak right up to you and you don't even know it. I mean, when I caught that troll, the picture of that troll, that thing was only 25 feet away from me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was there. I mean, I would have assumed they would have went back in the woods, especially if somebody's seen them, you know, when the one walked by. I mean, for them to come back that close, I mean, that's brazen right there. I'm telling you, I wish I would have known he was sitting there because I would have definitely, I mean, I try to nonchalantly pan my thermal. Every time I've ever caught something good, it's been in a pan or the thermal has been, I'm not even in focus or I'm not even paying attention to what's going on. They know. When you stand there and point a camera at them, I can't stress that. I mean, you know, I can't stress that more. I mean, they know when you point something at them. I don't care whether it's you looking at them or you point a camera at them or a thermal camera or, you know, night vision. I mean, I use Generation 3 sometimes, and, you know, it doesn't matter. They
yeah.
will be against that tree and, you know, the hide behinds. I know you like that term, too. First time I heard it was from a guy actually in down there in Mississippi, a buddy of mine, Greg Phillips, and his wife, Charlotte, they'd come up here and investigate with us sometimes. He said that a lot of the old-timers up down there, that's what they call them. And it was interesting to hear that from Apex, that they actually call them that here in the Carolinas, you know, at the turn of the century, settlers that came into the area. That was one of the names that they called the hide behinds. And that's what they do. I mean, you know, it's a good way to explain what you saw.
Yeah. With the trail cameras, I do think they could see the IR a lot of times. But what I tend to do, and we talked about this before, was sometimes I'll set up these trail cameras around an area that I'm camping in for two reasons. One, I don't think they're super, you know, I believe that they can make mistakes and that there's a possibility of them
they're
crossing
perfect.
One. Yeah, well, yeah, I don't believe they're perfect. Right, exactly. You know, there's a few trail camera pictures out there that I really enjoy seeing. Derek Randles has got a couple. Cliff Brockman, not his trail camera, but one that he got out of Clackamas is really fascinating. But I put them up. Maybe they'll make a mistake and maybe I'll get lucky. But also, what I tend to do is put them up in an area and I spread them out to kind of make a corridor so that if they avoid it, they only have one way to come into my camp. So mm-hmm. they see these things, you know, maybe they'll avoid them and come from a different direction so that I may know what direction they're coming in from. And it, in my opinion, it's kind of worked before that they've avoided the troll cameras completely and come around from a different direction. So it's kind of like a deterrent from them, you know, so that I can kind of pinpoint where they're coming from.
Right.
And that's just something I've tried. You know, I don't know if it's true or not. You know, but it's something I've tried and seems to have gotten a little bit of results from it. But, you know, I think once you're in the forest, they pretty much know you're there regardless. And if they're curious, they'll come close. If they're not or whatever,
right.
they won't. But, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, we've pulled pictures before from where, you know, and it's always something right against the lens, you know. I mean, I've had them 20 feet up in a tree. I've had them 10 feet up in a tree. I had them, I put them up there where it's actually looking down on an area, you know, trying to possibly fool them. But, I mean, they just see the things. I mean, I've tried to camouflage them and, you know, and I get plenty of deer, hogs, you know, you name it, turkey, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, just never any good pictures of a big.
Yeah. Well, we got some questions on in our chat room, especially about your troll picture. And yeah, no, there's a lot of people. Yeah, you know, they're asking, you know, a troll, you know, what does it mean by that sort of thing? And, you know, you're not coming out and saying that 100% that's a Bigfoot or whatever, but it is.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. The first time I saw it, it kind of looked like a little troll to me, you know. That's why
you gave it the name. Yeah, that's why you gave the name, because it looked like a troll.
Yeah,
it's very small, isn't it?
Yeah, we've been calling that since day one, since Rick Corliss down there in Georgia. What happened was is Rick was doing a review in some of the thermal footage, and he happened to see what appears to be a dark shadow figure. And I've long known, I've caught one back in, 2011 using a FLIR i5, just a regular residential-type FLIR unit. I caught one, a figure that actually appeared dark or colder than its surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew one was in there. I had a bunch of guys with me, and this was right after a BFRO expedition, probably a month later, I think, 2011, November, I think. And, we knew one was in there just because of it. We seen the eye glow. I mean, we seen eyes glowing in this area, and we also heard movement. So we tried to surround it. We had people go around the other side. It was kind of stuck in an island area of woods, so it would have had to pass somebody to get out of there. Thing was, is everybody started getting creeped out. I mean, in going back to the campsite, and I can't blame them because I stuck it out as long as I could solo before I just felt like I had to leave. But before I left, I actually did take some thermal pictures, and this is capable of just taking pictures. And I have those. One of them is on the background on one of my web pages. You can see it. But it basically, or in one of the reports I have in there on one of my expeditions, you could see it, something standing in the background. I mean, it did have a heat signature, I think, where its hand was at one time. You can see a heat signature, but the rest of the figure's dark. I mean, that goes to say, I mean, thermally, they don't always show up as hot like you think they would. Now, whether they can, control their body temperature, I have no idea, or they can possibly, their hair's thick enough to shield and insulate them well enough to where their body heat don't escape. I don't know. I don't think they, personally, I don't think they can cloak. I don't think they can, you hear all this stuff of them disappearing. I don't think they can do any of that. I think they just use what's natural to them. And a lot of the things they use are things that we could probably do if we lived out there all the time.
Yeah. So, well, yeah.
Is therm technology as far as it's going to go? Or are we still in the developmental stages?
I wish I had like a 60 hertz camera where I could take clearer pictures. I mean, I use a Thermaleye X100, and which I got a pretty good deal on it. But I've used FLIR 3s. I've tried the 5. I think I tried a 7 at one time. And I'd like to be able to afford a FLIR Scout. You're talking some serious cash there for one of those. So, eventually I'll have one probably. I'm hoping to get one eventually, but I'm happy with what I have now, although I just wish it was a higher hertz where I could take better pictures, better video. So, it's actually worked for me, so that's the way I don't care what anybody thinks about my pictures that I take with. I know what's out there, and I was there, and, like I said, a lot of times I don't even know I've captured it until I've gotten home, but I have taken some. Actually, in UR, we have other footage that I've had released, of ones in the background and stuff moving between trees. So, in due time, I'll release some of that stuff, too. It's just that I have a pretty big network of friends who, constantly looking through stuff and trying to pull it out. And most of the video and stuff I've been doing on my own. I don't have anybody to do it for me. And, it's just time-consuming. I don't have the time to sit there and play around with it. And do all that. So if anybody wants to help me out, by all means, get in touch with me.
Yeah, likewise. All right, Dave, I think we're going to take a break here, but when we get back, we'll keep on discussing Bigfoot and in the Carolinas and what you got going on there. So.
Okay. All right.
All right. We're back with Dave Moser of the Carolina Bigfoot Field Research Group.
Hello.
CBFRG.
Yep. Love the name. So, Dave, I got a question for you. You know, I've looked at your site and I've read some of the encounters that you've taken in and some of the reports that you've taken in. What to you are some of the more credible and exciting reports that you've taken in from witnesses?
Probably one of the best ones, a guy down there, quote, actually owns some of the private land that we research on down there. He had several Class A's on, well, you know, I know of him personally having two, possibly three. He one night was, it was in the fall a couple of years ago, they were burning leaves out in the backyard next to the wood line. Well, the fire about got a little bit out of control, and he started spraying water, you know, got his hose out and turned the water on and started spraying water to try to control the fire somewhat, and the fire kind of flared up at one point on the one end, and when he did, he saw a Bigfoot standing there, and he actually sprayed the Bigfoot with some water.
Oh.
And the Bigfoot turned around and walked back in the woods. Didn't even do it, you know. I mean, and pretty incredible story, though. I mean, to
and
actually...
He's had a couple of Class A's in, and is this private property?
Yes, it is. And him and his whole family have. They've, you know, they're a little leery of going in the woods, and which I can't blame them. You know, I always tell people, I mean, people ask me a lot for advice on that with young kids and stuff, and I'm at the point where I tell people, you know, hey, they're your kids, I'd keep an eye on them. I'd keep, you know, when they're out there in the woods or playing close to the woods, keep an eye on them. You never know. People
yeah.
disappear in the woods every day. I mean, David Pallides wrote a whole book on, a couple books on that, you know. Whether that's related to these creatures or not, that's, you know, who knows.
Yeah.
People disappear in the woods every year, you know. And so.
Well, there's plenty of natural predators and just natural things that can happen to you out in the woods to not pay yeah. attention to your kids and whatnot. Be a mistake,
including humans.
Yeah, yeah,
the
exactly.
Predator in the woods.
Yeah, you know, and that's half the reason. You know, people. One of the questions I get a lot is, "Do you carry a weapon?" Well, I always carry a weapon, and it's nothing to do with Bigfoot. To be honest, it's just natural predators and just the weirdos that you could meet out there. You know, Oregon's yep. got a ton of stories of, you know, meeting. Odd people in the woods, you know, that are armed. You know, nowadays you got to worry about all these drug operations going out in the woods and whatnot. And, you know, and
yeah.
in your area, you probably got more of like the, what do you call it, the moonshining going on.
Still?
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, still, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not so much in my area, but up toward the mountains, yes, there is a lot of that. And, I mean, you know, honestly, what I've been told from people I know, I've met a few people that have shined a little bit and up in those areas. I mean, they're not going to shoot you if you walk into their area like these drug dealers have been doing out west. I mean, I've never heard of any, you know, but then again, you never know. You walk up on the wrong person, you might. But I've never ran into one personally, and I've been in some of the thickest places in the middle of nowhere you'd ever dream about, you know. I've never ran into a still back in there, but I'm sure I might have been close to one before, possibly, but, you know, that's really my biggest fear is other people in the woods running into the wrong person. I mean, I know
right.
a few stories of people running into the wrong person, you know, and really feeling, especially a lot of backpackers, too, especially near the Appalachian Trail, which I don't really backpack that myself, runs through this area of North Carolina, Georgia. Parks in Georgia.
Do you get a lot of encounter reports, I mean, that are shared with you? You know, how many, do you get a lot a week, a month?
I would say it's actually been picking up here for some reason last year. Right? It's been getting more and more. And out of, as far as per week, maybe I get one or two. It would seem like a good average. And out of the one or two, you know, maybe one is something we'll follow up on. I give a lot of reports right now to Rick down there in Georgia, and he kind of weeds through them. He used to be a police investigator, so he knows how to kind of question people. And, you know, you can really weed out a lot of, you know, attributed to something else other than a Bigfoot. But,
right.
You know, and then a lot of them are. I've got some pretty good encounters. I gave one to Apex down there in the low country that I just got here the other day. And I actually sent that to Jennifer down there, too, and hoping she can get in there and maybe check that out sometime, too. But a pretty credible Class A of a hunter in the woods who came face-to-face with one, you know, 7-foot-tall, I guess about a 7-foot-tall creature, you know, in the middle of the woods in some of his hunting, in one of his hunting areas.
Mm-hmm.
The thing turned around, looked at him, turned around, screamed, and ran, you know, walked off at a fast pace in the woods.
What month was that in?
Actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was in October of this year.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the reason I ask is, down in your area, what are the hot months, you think, for reports or a possible encounter? Summer months?
It all depends where you're at, but in the summer it does slack off, and I think that's due to the heat and cover you get. I mean, I don't really go out too much in the middle of the summer just because everything's so overgrown, and, I mean, they will get right up on you then. But there are some areas. I feel like around here, the spring and the fall of the prime times, and, you know, right about now, only because you got good distance you can see. All the leaves are off of the tree and so forth. But I've had more
and it's hot down there in the summer.
Damn, yeah, you're right about that.
So you know, basically,
it's a whole different kind of heat down there.
Yeah, so basically there's less people out in the woods that time of year, you would say.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the reason I ask is, for me personally, up here in Oregon, the summer months are actually the hot months up here. I mean, as far as encounters, that's when you get your most reports. But we have mild summers. I mean, you know, they can get in the hundreds, but, it's, you know, it's for like a week or so. But that's when everybody goes camping and whatnot because there's not much rain and the snow is melting and all that. So it's a completely different environment. But, you know, there are a lot of reports here in the wintertime as well. In the valleys, where I tend to think that, you know, during the winter months, that's kind of where Bigfoot would probably travel. You know, they kind of follow the deer and whatnot because that's where they're going to be foraging, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, completely different environment.
I wish we would get more snow around here because those are the times when I would like to get out and, you know, go to some of these areas and just try to look for tracks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and just see if you could locate one where, you know, occasionally we do get snow. I was in Euphoria last year the day after, and unfortunately it melted the next day. But I was kind of hoping it would have stuck around so, you know, I could actually get in there and follow some tracks pretty easy. Getting back to that, what you were saying about you know, what time of the year and so forth, I've actually been able to narrow down some things on some of my areas as far as migration patterns coming in certain areas. And I have reports going back 35 years of this same biggie that lives in Anderson County, Elbert, Hart County area, a tall, skinny one, about 6.5 feet tall, you know, pronounced eyebrow ridge, and so forth. And this thing has been seen for the past 35 years, and a lot of times before I even go to, you know, I don't never influence any, you know, witnesses as far as colors. I like them to, you know, come out and tell me exactly what they've seen before. And, I mean, I've had several tell me about the same one all the way up until, you know, a couple months ago where somebody has seen this same Bigfoot. I mean, and they all describe it the same, gray, white, tall, skinny, looks like it has mange, spotted hair where you can actually see its skin up under it, long matted hair. And it's been seen in probably about a 35-40 square mile area.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. So are you a proponent of migration or not?
A proponent of what?
migration. Do you believe that they migrate, or do you think
Yeah, they migrate, but I don't think it's great distances. I think it's all movement of deer and so forth, or you know, basically food. You know, berries are in season here, so maybe they switch over, eat berries for a while, and then they go back to eating, rounding up their deer and wild hogs.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Yeah, imagine
it's
a very unsettled life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as migration, you know, I don't think they personally migrate hundreds and hundreds of miles. No, I think Johnny's mentioned this before time and time again, and I agree with him, that they would have been found by now, you know, would have been discovered. I think they maybe travel within, you know, a 50 to maybe 100-mile radius, but 50 miles to me, especially in the area that I work in, is nothing. And you can get complete different temperatures and terrain within those 50 miles. That's really unique. So and then if they follow, say, deer or just, like you said, the berries and whatnot, 50 miles is perfect range for them.
Yeah, this one area I have over there on the border, South Carolina-Georgia border, I was fortunate enough to be able to go, like, every month. And I mean, I know they're going to be there in April or May. They'll be back in that area. And I mean, you go in there. I mean, you know, I find footprints all the time in there. And I mean, people say, "Oh, you need to cast them and all this." I mean, I have casted a few, but you know, as far as the ones I'm finding, they're usually in leaf litter and so forth. So it's just, I mean, you can reach down there and feel the toe, you know, the toes on these things easily, especially when you know you got 18-inch tracks. And I've found a lot of smaller ones. I found juvenile tracks stuck in the mud, especially down there on one of the pieces of property. Found some pretty really neat tracks that were, it appeared the thing was running, and it actually stabbed its foot into the mud as it was running. And I mean, you could plain as day with a flashlight see the toes down in the mud, you know, which was pretty interesting. But that is, if you want to find out when these things are going to be around, you got to get out there all the time. You know, you got to try to get out there as much as you can, because that is how, you know, that's how I've been able to actually track these down. Because I know when I go back down there, that's when I capture those screams in that area below the heart, you know, down there on the heart below Hartwell and Savannah, the Savannah River. We caught some those screams. I have that video on YouTube channel too. I mean, well, they're hard to hear, but if you were out there, I'll tell you what, those screams were sending chills down my spine, and they went on for a long time, you know. And I mean, it's possible it was a bobcat, but somebody show me a video of a bobcat screaming like that, and I'll believe it. You know, everybody says, "Oh, it's always a bobcat," but do you know it's a bobcat? I mean, even Stan Courtney said, I mean, even on his website, I mean, try to find a bobcat screaming like that, like a young woman. I mean, people say they, I'm sure they do, can scream like a young woman. I'm not saying that. You know, and you got your barred owls, too, that scare the crap out of you. But, you know, these things, I'll tell you, they when they let out a scream like that, you know it. It's a different experience.
Yeah, I heard that audio. That was pretty cool.
I mean, it's hard to hear, only because, unfortunately, I didn't have the separate recorder with me. I mean, I had it running through the monopod, and I didn't realize I was on a concrete pad, and the thing was
like the third or fourth or whatever one started getting real good.
I know, but the screams, man, they were getting me, man. And we went back across the river after that, and they kept on, you know, even when we got on the other side, they were going on. And, you know, pretty cool. I mean, and actually, you know what drew me down there? Well, I was down there on an investigation the night before, out on some other land we go to. And we're out there, and, you know, a guy calls us and tells us about a buddy of his from work had an encounter down there. He was fishing and saw what he thought was a man in a monkey suit walk back in the woods. So we go down there and, you know, walking down the river and during the day, and we find all these tracks down there, three different sizes. I mean, I believe it was an 8-inch track, and then there was another one that was around the 13, 14. Then we found an 18-inch tracks, and some of them were pretty darn clear. I mean, they were leaf litter, but in soft mud, to where it actually was no doubt about it. And I know nobody's down there. I mean, of course, somebody could be down there walking around in their bare feet. These weren't human tracks. These were, you know, typical wide wide and, you know, definitely different from a human threat. So I hike up on the ridge, and up on top of the ridge, I find a tree about, you know, 12, 13, 14 inches wide that had been turned around and stuck in the ground with the root ball in the air on the ridge. That's something, you know, you hear about happening, you know, that from the story up there in Alaska, that island. I mean, it was incredible. I couldn't believe it. I mean, because there's no way that tree fell like that. That tree was probably a good 30 feet long. And the end of it was stuck in the ground with the root ball in the air. I mean, I got pictures of it. I think there's some on the website, too. But, you know, and the whole time we were in there, man, I thought I caught a glimpse of one possibly on the top of the ridge. And I had the thermal out during the day, you know, and I was trying to get a heat signature. And it was pretty spooky, but that's why we went back there that night. And that's when we heard the screams. And obviously they had crossed the river and were on the Georgia side of the river that night. Because it was coming from that area, close to where actually we had our base camp, but it was something else to have all that stuff going on at once, you know. I mean, it's like all your dots are in a line there, you know. Don't happen like that all the time. You know, you got a sighting the night before, you got tracks, you got structures, you got something screaming its ass off in the woods.
Yeah, I mean, what would you compare it to? What would you compare it to, that sound you heard? I mean, the scream. I mean, a lot of people report that the screams sound like, old lady, you know, screaming her head off or, something along those lines.
Could have been coyotes fighting or I don't know. I didn't compare it to anything. I just heard it.
It's possible. I mean, you know, it's possible it is a known animal. I mean, but the thing was is, I don't know. I was out of the car 2 minutes, and I heard it right away. And Rick's a little, Rick's 70 years old. He's a little up there in age, so he don't hear as well as me. I mean, he does use sound amplifier and stuff when he's out there, but he didn't hear it right away, you know. And he's over there talking. I'm like, whoa, Rick, you know, what the hell is that? You know, you hear me on one of them saying that. I mean, I'm like,
it's definitely
I've never heard anything like it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to tell you, when I first heard it, I thought it sounded like amplified sound. You know, years ago, I worked as a DJ. I've done stuff in recording studios before. And to me, it sounded like amplified sound. It's just, I don't know. I mean, and I don't think there was anybody over there, you know. I was searching the other shoreline. I was looking for a possible car park somewhere, you know. And I had a good view, probably more than 300-400 yards, I mean, of the surrounding area, even though it was wooded. And I was, of course, scanning the other bank, you know, with the thermal, trying to pick up a heat signature up on the ridges. And never did really see anything on the ridges. There were a couple suspect spots, but at that distance, it's almost impossible to tell a human figure, you know, with the thermal I had. But I basically, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. I've listened to a lot of other animal sounds trying to compare it, and I haven't been able to get anything close. But, you know, if somebody knows what it is, by all means, tell me, because I'm still searching on that one.
Yeah, and you got that now on your new YouTube channel. Let's see.
Yeah,
I think we got a couple of callers here.
Yeah.
Let's let someone on air. 330, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul Hayes from the Genosis Project.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, what's up?
You earlier.
What's up, guys?
Hey, not much, Paul. How you doing? I know you talked to Dave, I think earlier today, about his, possible encounter there in Ohio. What was your take from that whole thing?
Oh, man, we had one hell of a good conversation going today.
Likewise, yeah, I did too, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when us biggie guys hook up, man, it's like I could sit there all day and listen to people, you know, tell their stories. I know y'all are the same way, too, you know. It's
heck
fun.
Yeah, Dave. I enjoyed our conversation. I could have lasted a lot longer if I didn't have to go to dinner.
Yeah.
But, Paul,
that
I
was,
mean, yeah.
Yeah,
would
yeah
you
that
take,
was pretty interesting, you know, and it's like, you know, and it's really not that far from me either. I'm thinking maybe, I don't know, maybe an hour or something. It's really not that far for me, you know. What kind of makes it interesting, you know, if I recall, I think, you know, Dave said it kind of had a grayish look to it, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, that, you know, because, you know, you have his back in, well, September of last year, there was a grayish color. And then, you know, not too long before his sighting down at Leesville, there was a sighting there, grayish color. You know, mm-hmm. So it's like here lately, you know, within the last few years or whatever, you know, people are seeing the whitish, grayish, you know, colored creatures. And it's like, wow, you know, is there like more than one in this, you know,
yeah,
general area or whatever, or is it the same one?
Because it's all within. Did any of those guys ever get a hype on any of those that you, you know, that were reported when they saw?
Well, it was a teenage girl that seen down in Leesville that witnessed that. It was watching her walk up through the hill, and as much as we know about the sighting, because her parents wouldn't actually let her do an interview, you know,
mm-hmm.
It was, you know, they guesstimated about 7 foot,
mm-hmm.
You know, so.
I know the one, what I saw, which of course it was so, the cover was so thick. I mean, there was no way to tell its height, but I seen it up to maybe about 5 feet, above the ground. And it was probably taller than that. I just couldn't see it because I just caught a glimpse of it as it was coming down the creek bed screaming at us. You know, my coworkers, oh, hey, let's get in the car. I'm like, no, man, no. Don't get in the car. Let's stay out. You know, I'm like, he's like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know? It's like,
yeah, I want people with the therms to approach.
Yeah.
Sounds easier said than done, but that's what I'd like to see. And for those of you that are calling in, you have to press 1 to talk, so you can call in to listen, but you can also call in to join us on air.
Yeah, we had a good conversation, you know, about, you know, a bunch of different things, you know, and, you know, just different stuff that he had going on and I had going on. And, you know, we talked about, you know, we'll share some stuff, you know, some stuff we do hold back, you know, and, you know, just different things like that. I mean, I'm sure, you know, we'll release some stuff sooner or later. But
yeah, I mean, the whole thing, I'm like, Paul, you know, I mean, I don't mind releasing stuff. And, I mean, whether it's biggie or not, I mean, I'm just releasing what I think is. I mean, I'm not saying it's a biggie. I mean, I don't know what it is. That's why I released it. But, you know, just from trolling the websites and being online and looking at boards and, you know, different boards and stuff, I have better things to do than listen to people that, like, you know, giving you bad crap about what you put out there. I mean, I could care less. I mean, anybody that knows me knows that, you know, we're not going to put anything that's fake out there. I mean, what I found, and I recorded it, and it's up to everybody else to look at. I mean, you know, I don't care what you think about it, but I was there and I know what happened, you know. I mean, you have this stuff going on. But I think it's better, you know, we can come to some, accord where all us guys, you know, we just keep sharing our stuff because that's what's going to help the younger generation when, you know, if this thing remains a secret on and on the next few years, is you can get other people interested and they can add to the data, you know. And, you know?
Well, and one of the things, you know, one of the ideas for me behind Monster X Radio is to get some of you guys together, and me as well, you know, together and share ideas and stories, encounters, and ideas, and you know, maybe work together to develop patterns. You know, especially in these. I mean, we're talking about Dave. I mean, you're complete polar opposite from me. You know, I'm in Oregon and you're in North Carolina, you know, but yet a lot of the encounters reported are similar. They're very similar. So I like to develop patterns, you know. You know, a lot of them are, you know, maybe you can explain away as something else, but there's so many out there that can't. So I like to talk to you guys and develop patterns and relay stories, encounters, ideas on research and whatnot, because it only it always a positive thing for me, you know.
Yeah.
From there, yeah.
That's it. I mean, you know, we could keep sharing, and Apex down there in the lower half of the state. I mean, he's come up with genius. I mean, genius things that he has sent me. Some of the research he's done on like deer density populations and wild hog populations, and how he's been able to track different ones from reports, in different areas, and they're using these corridors that correspond with high density of either deer or wild hogs.
Mm-hmm. And yeah,
it's really interesting that you know, who would have known that, you know, I mean, that goes to prove right there that they do follow the possible migration patterns of where deer are and where they congregate.
Well, I'm a full believer in that they possibly do that. You know, we don't really have a hog population out here, so it's not really an issue. But elk and deer are prevalent, and that's something that I tend to follow. I even follow bear migrations and tendencies because, you know, they're a predator as well. But
right.
I like to see, you know, basically, in my opinion, if you can locate bear, chances are Bigfoot, you know, may possibly be in the same areas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the sighting maps line up pretty much the same.
Pretty good.
And, and I think that accounts for some of the sightings as well as being misidentifications of a bear, because they do stand up on their hind legs, especially when they get scared or when they sense something getting close, they'll stand up and smell.
Yeah, they just don't tend to hang onto a tree and peer behind it or move back and forth on their back legs sideways to sideways. So, it's usually something I could roll out if it's a bear, especially if you approach it. You know, bear will tend to flee.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good, honest people out there that send in reports of, you know, mistaken identity. I firmly believe that a lot of the reports, you know, that I get are just mistaken identity of somebody who doesn't spend a lot of time in the woods. They're being observant because of some of the TV programs that have been on TV, like, you know, I mean, and people are looking for these things more than they are. More than they used to. I mean, people have a more sense and awareness that these things could possibly be out there. And but it's good. I mean, whether it's mistaken identity or not, it's still good to get the report out because, you know, back, 5-10 years ago, nobody would even think of submitting a report. I mean, I know BFRO went through that for a long time where, you know, it was hard to get reports.
Right.
And I talk to people. I mean, I know you guys have too. You talk to people who – they're so relieved that they can tell their story because we don't laugh at them.
Yeah.
You know, we've all heard it before from other people. I mean, you know, that relieves a lot of these, especially these people that are, you know, later in age. You know, I can't tell you the number of people I've talked to and, you know, age 60 and above who are just relieved that they can finally tell their story to somebody without being ridiculed and joked, you know, and laughed at.
Yeah, I think Derek Randall said it best when he said that there's two types of people that encounter Sasquatch. There's two types of reports, or none of. Basically, you have those that have an encounter that once they have this encounter, they're looking to share their story, tell everybody, find where they can share it, and then you have those that don't share it, and basically it changes their life. But they don't share it anywhere, you know, and they hunker down and are quiet about it. But some of the best reports, and I've said this time and time again on this show and other places, some of the best encounters and reports I find are on hunting sites or hikers' sites. Nothing to do with
that, right.
just people sharing a story or asking a question, and then when somebody jumps in on it, they kind of share their encounter, and they're not reporting it to any Bigfoot place, you know, they're just going, hey, this is what I saw, this is what I encountered, anybody else, and usually they get ridiculed to no end.
Oh, yeah, man.
And
tear them guys up when they talk about Bigfoot.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's the end of conversation, and before you know it, people are posting pictures of the beef jerky Bigfoot and whatnot and laughing at them, and they shut up. But some of the best encounters and reports I've found, even from my area, have been on these sites, and that's usually where I go first. You know, BFRO is a great site, and, you know, they got so many reports they have to go through, and they have to contact the local researcher to go to the area or contact a witness, and it's a long process. You know, it's a long process to get those on the BFRO site. You know,
it takes months,
sometimes over a year, you know. I mean, they get so many encounters, and there's limited resources as far as researchers that everything's BFRO's got these hundreds and thousands of research out there. No, these areas have specific researchers, and they have to go through so many reports, and some of them are legit, some aren't, and then they have to go out and interview the witness or call them and then go out to the area, and then they got to write a report about it and post it on there. And it's a long process.
Well, what you got with that is there's you know, roughly about 270 active BFRO members, you know, that go out and take reports and, you know, go over all the info. And then once they write their report up, then they hand it off to, there's one person that goes through, proofreads, does all that, and then puts it on the actual database. So you got one person that puts it on there, you know. So if, you know, if, and they're all volunteers, so, you know, if you know, it'll take a month to do that, you know. So, and they're still working, you know, from the system from, you know, 1995, you know, an old system too, so let's don't speed things up. But I know, you know, speaking of, you know, people, you know, hesitate to report a sighting or whatever. Actually, about a half of an hour after I got off the phone with Dave, I was contacted by a gentleman that actually only lives about a mile from me, and he had an encounter in April, the middle of April of 2012, and it was him and a buddy, and he didn't, like, tell nobody. And then, you know, he kind of wanted to get his story out, but he didn't want to be, you know, called names and an idiot and a nut and everything else. So I talked to him for a little over an hour on the phone, and it wasn't a Class A sighting, but, you know, he said that he kind of gave me the address and all that to the place. He goes, man, when I tell you this, he goes, pull it up on Google Maps, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I did that, and, you know, and he's telling me that, you know, they were about an eighth of a mile away from, you know, the wooded area, and he goes, they were sitting in there, him and his buddy, and they were on YouTube doing some stuff, and he said they had the one window open, and then the dogs and stuff that he had in there, they were like all curled up because it was like 11 o'clock at night, you know, they were sleeping, and, you know, then they thought they heard something, and then the dogs kind of lifted their heads and kind of looked at the window, and then they heard it again, so all the dogs went to the other end of the house, and so they kind of walked out, and they heard these really, really loud screams coming from the woods, and he goes, I'm telling you, it's something you ain't never heard before. It's, you know, he goes, it wasn't no coyote. It wasn't a dog. He goes, I'm a musician. He goes, I do own my own music store. And he goes, I don't know if you know what a low C note sounds like. And I'm like, well, really, I don't, but, you know. And he says it started out as a ooh, and ended in ah, and he said it was like the level of a low C note. And he says, you know, after we get off the phone, he said, go on YouTube and search for a low C note, and you'll hear what I'm talking about, how low that is. And even though it was a real low tone, it was loud. And he goes, humans can make that, reach that note, but it's rare for somebody to do it, but it's also impossible to do it for the length amount of time that this thing did. And then he says him and his buddy, he goes, his buddy grabbed his 9mm. I went, uh-oh. And he goes, we hopped in the truck and we went right down the road real fast. And he goes, as soon as we turned the corner, he goes, there was this really bad stench. He goes, it was awful. And he said, you heard these screams, and as you heard the screams, he goes, it was moving. And he goes, it covered enough area that normally would take a human 10 minutes to walk. It did it in like 2.
Wow.
And, yeah, he said this thing screamed quite a few times. And, you know, so I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I'm writing down all this info. And, you know, and then after I got off the phone with him, I went on YouTube and I listened to what a low C note would sound like. And it's pretty low, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, you know. And, but, you know, this guy here, he goes, man, I'm glad I could tell somebody about this. He goes, you know, my buddy knows, but, you know, he done moved away. And he goes, I tried to tell my mom about it, and she kind of laughed at me. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, so he goes, man, I'm glad I could talk to somebody about this. And, you know, he's more than willing to do an interview, you know, on camera. So I'm going to get with him and do an interview and, you know,
yeah,
I'll end up putting it on my YouTube here, but
do it, Paul. Yeah. We would love to have him on the show as well after you get done interviewing him. Maybe it'd be a great show.
Yeah.
Dave, how does what Paul described here compare to what you heard on the outskirts of Ohio?
It was a long and lingering scream, and it did stop and it reverberated as far as the sound of it. It was a long, I would say it was actually higher than a C note. I would say up there possibly around, you know, like an A note probably, or, you know, somewhere up there. And it was, you know, I'm not a singer or anything, but it was kind of like, it was like at that pitch, but it was intense, and it was directed right at us. And as the thing walked by us, it actually, you could tell it had to have turned its head as it was walking and directed it at us. Because it never did waver as far as the intensity of it.
Gotcha. Now, a lot of people report that you could actually feel it in your bones or on the ground. I mean, was that something that you experienced?
Looking back on it, I can't remember, but I just know the hair on the back of my neck was standing up.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, cool, man, we're having a big fun.
Do you guys feel like we're getting closer?
What's that?
Do you guys feel like we're getting closer to the discovery, and why don't you think we've discovered them yet?
Because they live out there and they're attuned to their environment. I mean, we're not attuned. We're not used to being out there like they are, and they can avoid you really well. I mean, that's obvious. I mean,
easily.
Getting pictures of them. I mean, you know, they know when you're looking at them, and they know you're there before you even know they're there. As soon as you go in the woods, if they're around, they're going to know you're there. And I do think over the next few years there will be some probably monumental video come out somewhere. Yeah, I mean, that's still not going to be proof, video and pictures. Maybe somebody will find a body one day. Hard to say. I mean, there's been, you know, with Justin's murder and them, I mean, possibly, you know, I don't know what to think of that. I mean, maybe they, you know, I don't know the guy, so, you know, whether he really shot one or not. I mean, hopefully, maybe they still have some of that. They can continue to keep testing, and hopefully somebody will find a body one day. Or, I mean, I hope it's not from where somebody shoots one, but, I mean, it's always possible.
Yeah.
Those bodies are somewhere. You know what I mean? They are somewhere. I mean, you know, I don't know, you know.
Whether they bury them or they take them and put them underground somewhere, I don't know.
Yeah,
would have to be. There would have to be.
There's somewhere, you know. It's just
it'd be tough
just
to
a matter
bury
of
with just without
Jim,
tools.
Yeah, Jim Vieira. I mean, he posts daily giant bones. You know, he's a stonemason. I met him at the Alex Midnight Walker's conference he had last year. By the way, Alex Midnight Walker and trying to think of her name there. Arla Williams. I was sitting there trying to think of her name. Went to their conference, and Jim was there, and I actually was out on a night investigation. I got paired up. They had a private Bigfoot outing the night before, and I was stuck in there with Chris Noel and Jim Vieira, but I got to know him pretty good while I was there. And he posts every day giant newspaper articles from the turn of the century where people have found and dug up bones, especially up there in your area, Paul, Pennsylvania, Ohio, even Minnesota, Johnny, where you're from. And, it's constant one after – every day you post an article about it, and, of course, Smithsonian's called in there to look at the bones, and, now Smithsonian claims that they don't have them anymore, or they lost them. So, whatever,
Well, the thing is, people have a hard time fathoming that there is possibly something in the woods that big that is that smart and can avoid human detection, and obviously – if they exist, like I know they do, they have to be super intelligent, stealthy, and hyper aware of their environment. We're talking about something that can avoid a lot of, not just hunters, but trail camera pictures and whatnot. We're talking about something that if you step in the woods, they pretty much know you're there, and they've had a lot of practice at this. I don't find it that hard to believe at all.
No, it's really not that hard to believe.
You think one would slip up by now, whether it's
hit
by a car or it dies and gets found. There's many ways you'd think one would slip up somewhere along the line.
Well,
or during maybe construction, but like you say, if they hide those bones, then it's kind of hard to find those.
Well, when animals die, their bones don't last forever out in the wild anyway.
Not at all.
I came across one day surveying, I came across an eastern box turtle feeding on bones of a deer. It was actually crunching them. That's what gave them away. I heard this crunching sound. I looked over, and there was a box turtle there eating the bones of a deer. Now, it's known since I used to dabble in herpetology and all that, bones provide calcium. And, other animals eat bones. Dogs eat them. Dogs gnaw on them and get the calcium out of them.
True.
So
you think there'd be
like
a fossil record.
Bones still in the open disappear.
Just like when it comes to trail cams, it'd be just like if somebody came to your house while you was gone and hung a trail cam on your dining room wall. When you walk in there, you're going to go, what the hell? You're going to know it, So it's a saying, that's their home. And, I would say they're usually in an area, for quite some time in a general area. And, they know every tree and, they know everything, so.
Yeah.
That's it. They know it.
That's true.
Yeah,
they
know it
without them knowing
it. We have so many different modes of transportation that we do go through the forest on, and the DNR, they can tell you how many moose are in each state, and they fly over in helicopters and tranquilize them and track them. We have manhunts for missing people where they use therm on helicopters, and cover huge areas. Bigfoot's not going to know about that,
Yeah, but you bring up a good point. One of the areas I research in, and I mentioned this before on the show, there's a missing person that, and if you know the area that I work in, this person should have been found with the tackle. We're talking about fishing tackle, backpack, clothing, in a relatively relatively easy area to find a missing person in. The lakes, you can see the bottom from a helicopter, and this person just disappeared. Off the face of the earth. They found his tent, and that was it. His fishing gear, everything's gone. They've searched all the lakes. They can see to the bottom of him. He's not there. And nothing. No clothing, anything. So anything can disappear in the forest. You know, I've been in this area, I don't know how many times, and the other bears in this area, there's elk, deer, raccoons, you name it, it's out there. I've not found a carcass yet in this area, and I've been researching this area for many years now. No bodies of anything. I see live animals here and there, but the forest will eat up a body real quick. You know, I'm not saying this guy that's missing is Sasquatch related. I'm not going there. No idea. But this guy did disappear, and the body is gone. And they had the National Guard out there. They had I still look for him to this day because I know where he camped at. I've camped at the very spot that he camped at. I've gone out looking for him. I've gone to the areas that he possibly would have gone fishing. And it's, you know, there's about five or six areas that he would have gone fishing. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Gone. So things disappear in the forest. It's very easy to happen. And, you know, to say that it'd be that easy to find a Bigfoot body or a bear body or a cougar body or an elk or deer body is a joke because it just doesn't happen.
Well, you know, something
true,
like
but
that.
We do have
you know.
Those bodies. They are part of the fossil record. They have been found, though, you know.
Well,
yeah, that's,
they,
you
know, they are.
If you're going to find, if you happen to come across or you're wanting to find a Bigfoot body, you're going to have to do it within, you know, 5-6 days of it dying. Because after that, it's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it only takes 7 days for a whole deer to be gone. 7 days.
Okay.
And the rest of the Bigfoots might, like you say, they might sink that thing in a swamp or just get it out of our way so we can't find it.
You know, you don't. Mm-hmm.
It is just amazing, though, that something can survive so few numbers in such isolation, you know, still to this day. I mean, we do have the technology at our hands now, and I think that's, you know, slowly giving us an advantage
mm-hmm.
as far as, you know, getting some better.
I
would just like to see a good picture, you know, or is Bigfoot just blurry?
Well,
you know what I thought the other night when I was out there right before Christmas at, down there at that troll site, at, when I was up there by myself, for some reason, I could not get that camera to focus at one point, you know, and it was kind of strange because that focus was really, really driving me nuts. And whether these things could tap into magnetic energy or not, I don't know. But, you know, I kind of have a theory that there's a possibility that they can. I mean, we've done some experience, too, with EMF detectors, and I've seen those things go ballistic in the middle of nowhere where, you know, they shouldn't even be going ballistic. So, I mean, you know, there's all types of you know, opinions out there and all that. And I'm not saying these things are supernatural. I mean, they just know how to use things that for their purposes that we don't know how to use, you know. You know, whether they can tap into the magnetic energy, I don't know. But it's
well, you know,
really
what,
strange
what,
how all the pictures always come back blurry, you know. I mean,
yeah, one thing that you got to keep in mind, too, if there's a lot of quartz in the area, you're going to have a high reading, and it's going to mess with your electronics. So
you've been to Uwari before, huh? Uwari, there is quartz all over the ground in that forest. It's amazing how it just lays there. You know, why isn't it covered up? But it just lays there all over the place.
Yeah,
and
you know,
heard that
our,
from other people, too, about the quartz.
Area in that we was researching in Carroll County, there's a lot of quartz in that area, and
mm-hmm.
there was one particular area, it had to have been, I mean, just abundant with quartz because everywhere on that 100 acres, my GoPro camera works flawlessly. I mean, it works great. That one area, I couldn't get it to do anything. I couldn't get it to shut off. I couldn't get it to do anything. I ended up removing the battery to shut it off, put the battery back in, turn it back on, and it would come on, wouldn't record, wouldn't do anything until I got out of that area. And then it worked fine. It's weird, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw one of the comments there. I just pulled up a while ago, the blog. But, you know, Yeah, somebody was on there talking about the supernatural stuff, and I mean, I don't deny there's ghosts out there. I'm not a ghost hunter or anything like that, but I have watched shows just for equipment advice, you know, to see what kind of equipment they use and stuff. And you know, I have picked up EVPs before on my recorders, you know, with supposed, you know, talking. I mean, who knows? It could have been Biggie talking for all I know, but I don't
like the word
that
Biggie.
Ghosts. I mean, I know a lot of people who've had supernatural encounters, you know, in the woods. So, you know, teach his own. But I just don't think personally, I don't think that the Biggies are supernatural or anything like that. I think they just use ability.
Do you think because of their high intelligence and the fact that we haven't figured them out or found them that they are a type of human?
It's a tough question, you know, because I struggle with that being brought up a Christian and all. And, you know, I basically tell you my belief. I think that they could possibly be like remnants of the Nephilim that's talked about in the Bible. Now, how they survived the flood or whatever, I don't know. I mean, whether Noah's sons' wives carried the gene or whatever, I have no idea. But, you know, so... You know, that saying they could possibly have some powers that we don't have. I don't know, and I'm not saying that's necessarily what they are, but
yeah,
kind of a theory that other people throw around that seems interesting to me that could be a possibility.
Yeah,
yeah, that would make them evil then, I think, or half evil.
Possibly, you know, possibly. You know, there's different theories on that too. I mean, you know, at one time they were. Basically, in the Bible, it seems like the giants were banished to another land or whatever, and, you know, supposedly they mated with females from the villages and stuff like that, I guess. But, you know, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I'm just giving my opinion on what I've heard or what I've actually researched it a little bit. So,
I've researched it a lot, and, you know, I have no problem saying I'm a Christian, and I have huge problems with the fossil record. And when I hear it mentioned, you know, I have huge problems with the fossil record in general. I have no idea what Sasquatch is. I mean, I'm not going to claim to know that. But I will tell you that, you know, I know they exist. But what they are, I have no idea. And that's my goal is to figure out, you know, what they are and how I go about proving it. You know, a lot of people will argue, you know, you don't need to prove it or, you know. But, I mean, it's something I enjoy doing is going out there and trying to figure out exactly what Sasquatch is and – you know, people can bitch about it all day, but in the end, you know, if you were to say, hey, you know, let's look at what people are doing to the forest nowadays and the environment, you know, eventually Sasquatch will be discovered whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Do you want to protect them or not? You know, I mean, so proving Sasquatch exists, in my opinion, is a good thing. Because that's just human nature, and you know, to me, I just have so much fun going out there looking for this this being, this thing. You know, what it is, I have no idea. I know they exist, but it's an adventure and it's fun. And you know, got a lot of big things planned this year for this. Dave, what have you got planned this year? Do you have anything planned this year for as far as research goes?
Yeah, I actually think. Plan to keep a pretty good vigil on my South Carolina Georgia border areas just because I know things will be heating up here in a couple months to where they'll be more active again. Well, I mean, the one area is active right now. I plan on being down there in another couple weeks or so, but I mean, that area is that's the right place. Not a lot of people go in there. There's no hunting allowed in there. People do sneak on the land, and it's actually not just one property owner, it's several property owners. And that own huge chunks of land that have given us permission. So we have quite a big area to actually explore in there. And I have some ideas. There is some actually Indian folklore in the area. And University of Georgia did a study on archaeology dig on one of the pieces of property where there was a cave at one time. Which, you know, anything to do with Indians ties into all this too. I mean, there's so many stories how, you know, the Indian folklore and so forth, you know, so that makes things even better when you have that, you know, to add in the mix.
Yeah.
Quartz, Indians, swamp, you know, this is swampland part of the area, and I think I've narrowed it down to where they stay most of the time. It's just a matter of we finally got permission from a landowner to go in a different area, so I'm hoping we can narrow it down and maybe set up some base camps and put some cameras out there. So, and I do plan on doing some more stuff in Uwari. I love Uwari. We have areas outside of Uwari, not necessarily always in the Uwari National Forest. I know a lot of researchers who go out, you know, in that area. And
yeah.
I love going out and meeting up with other people, you know, and getting with them. And, you know, we have some areas there that are really, really hot still.
Well, Dave, I hope you stay in touch with us, man, and share some of your research and whatnot. And we really look forward to hearing more about some of your research. And, man, we talked about this on the phone. I would love for you to come out, you know, this way out to Oregon and maybe possibly in Washington and join me or possibly Derek Randall's on one of his Olympic Project expeditions. Or, you know, maybe possibly down the road I'll make it out that way, you know. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, you're more than welcome to come out here anytime. And I'll fly right into Charlotte. I'll pick you up, buddy.
Oh, right on, man. But, yeah, like I said, hey.
Come along. Johnny, you can come along too, man. We'll get y'all out there.
I love it, Georgia. I got some relatives in Georgia.
Yep.
Yeah, but yeah. If you can,
I really like
this South
Georgia,
we'll
too.
Mm-hmm.
But
I thought
and
I'd
North
come
Georgia,
out that
Squatchy.
I told you, Derek Randall's is on my bucket list anyway to go do one of his things sometimes. He's a great
yeah.
guy.
Yeah, I would love for you to make it out and Squatch with me, but I plan on doing some stuff with Derek Randall's this upcoming summer, and if you want to join us up there at the Olympic Project, that'd be fantastic, and you'll get to meet some of the best researchers out there and just the best human beings in this field
mm-hmm.
that you won't find on Facebook or online, but up there you will meet them, and it's, you know, tossing ideas around and whatnot. It's a great time, man. I really highly recommend it. You got to make it out there.
Would love to do it, man.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Dave.
Yeah, well,
and
nice,
Paul. And,
nice meeting you all, man. I would like to come back sometime, man. I'll keep you advised of what's going on.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yep, appreciate you having me on the show again here. Good talking to Dave again.
Yeah, Paul. Good talking
to
you,
Paul.
Man.
Yeah.
Always
yeah,
good to
we'll
have you on,
keep
Paul.
In touch here. Yep.
I'll shout we'll at you and send me back up. Back up to PA, Ohio area.
Yep.
There
thanks
you go.
For joining us, everyone in the chat room. We'll see you next week.
Good night.
Take care, everybody.